Hey everybody, this is the Brothers Whips number 44. It is April, mid-April. I know you guys are probably mad at us because we missed another one. That was wholly my fault, I apologize. But then again, I don't really care because none of you guys are paying us, so you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. That's what I tell my kids, works every time. So, joining us today is Greg Soule, me, the lovely, the bald, as it were. All the way from Slovakia, we've got Thomas Krenek.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Every time with the hello, hello. I love it. It's your catchphrase now. And then coming from Chicago away, we've got Mike Hammett.
How's it going?
Excellent. I'm doing well. I don't know about you. All right, so let's jump right in. We've got a ton of stuff. Every time we do this now that we skip one, I guess it's going to be a deluge and we've missed several things, one of them being the MUM, and I kind of added all the equipment at the end. They announced a lot of stuff, but some kind of housekeeping at the top. Let's see, fiberstore.com, fs.com. I'm not sure how many of you folks have never been there, but they're straight out of China. Optics, fiber, patch cables, coarse wave, dense wave, and Mike stumbled upon some dense wave division multiplex education stuff, right? So dense wave, coarse wave, that's where you have one strand of fiber, one pair of fiber, and you just run different light waves across it, right? So you can utilize the existing infrastructure you have more efficiently, so you can get more out of it. And they kind of teach you the ins and outs, and it's pretty cool. They have this little selector, right? So how far do you need to go? You just choose how far you need to go, and they say, here's all the gear, here's all the model numbers to actually make that happen. So it's pretty cool. And I know I've ordered from Fiber Store. I know several other folks that have, and it's fairly decent stuff. Mike also notes that they're now doing free shipping and no tax from North American warehouses.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's just limited to North America, but, I mean, either way, it's a good deal.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, their stuff's already inexpensive.
On that front, you know, there are Chinese places that are even cheaper than Fiber Store, but there's a lot less hand holding. You know, Fiber Store here, you know, on this new, you know, long haul fiber WDM tool, you know, it tells you everything you have to buy to make it happen. These other places, they have all the same components, but you have a very awkward ordering matrix of options, and like they don't tell you, hey, you know, you ordered something stupid, you shouldn't have that. No, like it's just you order what you order and they mail it to you. Right. And if you ordered something you didn't intend, tough.
Nice.
Really.
Something else I like on Fiber Store is if you ever start looking at their coarse wave, right? So coarse wave does fewer channels over existing fiber, whereas dense wave you can pack more in. But if you look at their muxes, so we call them colored optics, right? The different light waves are different colors. And they actually, so on the mux, it'll have a little plastic bezel that's a specific color. And then if you buy the colored optic that matches from Fiber Store, it's got a plastic bezel that matches the color plastic. I think that's super cool for idiots like myself. Yeah. Color goes to color.
Yeah, well, you know. It's a quick, you know, troubleshooting, you know, if something's not working right, okay, colors match, moving on.
Yeah, yeah, or if you don't have somebody local or you're sending out a tech, you can just say, all right, the colors match, right? So, or if they're patching something new, it kind of makes a little bit more idiot-proof. I think that's pretty cool.
I just hope you're not colorblind.
Yeah, for sure. So let's see, moving on. One, I thought, I don't know if this necessarily germane to anything we do, but I thought it was really interesting. It was an Ars Technica article about some inmates in a prison, I think in Ohio, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Middle America somewhere, that built some PCs out of scrap, and they like basically transported all of these pieces across the prison and then hid them inside of a training room attic so that they could, I think they said it was full of porn and like hacking tools and stuff like that, so that they could basically get around the prison's firewall. I thought that was ingenious, right? So most of the WISPs, I work with most of the WISPs I know. They're all MacGyvers at heart, right? Where you're rigging everything together and you're kind of duct tape, baling wire, making things happen. So I kind of admire the the spirit ingenuity that those guys had.
So the story was, right, that they were supposed to recycle the old unused PCs, but they were doing it unsupervised. So, you know, why not just build a bunch of functional PCs out of the stuff that they were supposed to recycle?
Yeah,
and actually, some of the things that because they networked them, there were actually they built quite a few PCs, hid them in like under the ceilings and everywhere, and they actually networked them together. And some of the stuff on there was actually quite scary. There were manuals how to build bombs and explosives and all, you know. And how, of course, how to make drugs and how to cook various, you know. But just imagine it, how they even got onto the internet and onto the prison's network.
That's
Did
awesome.
They just plug it into a switch? Or
Yeah, I think they said like, that how? They got tipped off because, like, a vendor's access credentials or somebody like that, they saw a spike in network traffic or something due to that.
Credentials.
So then they ended up, I think they said it took them a while, maybe a couple of months, but ended up tracking Ethernet cables and following them into the ceiling. But one of the things I thought they said on there, too, was they were researching plastics. Maybe that was just a typo. Or how to make plastic or something like that. I was thinking, what's the point of
plastic
that?
Plastic explosives, maybe.
Oh, maybe it was. Or I was thinking maybe they were trying to, like... Because it seems like there's enough plastic in there. You could make a shank out of something. I don't know. Maybe it was plastic explosives. It's pretty cool. Anyway, I admire the ingenuity. I guess it's, you know, it's probably not the best thing to admire them for. But, silver linings. At least they're staying busy, right? Idle hands sort of thing. They're learning a valuable skill. Let's see. I'm going to skip that one because it's super boring. Mimosa C5 security update. So it looks like C is for client, correct? Client 5 gigahertz. And so there were some security updates, and they have a patch for that, right?
I don't remember what it was for because I don't have any, so I didn't care that much. it's nice to see people, you know, making security releases. You know, not just waiting for the next feature release to get something out there.
For sure. And I don't know how good they are about notifying all their customers. So I always like plugging it whenever you see a security hole. If we're the source that you hear that from and you go and update, all the better for it. Moving right along, unless you have anything else to say about it.
Also, like, you know, there's still people that haven't figured out that there's a Ubiquiti vulnerability from a year and a half ago. You know, I still see people posting about getting infected the same infection that's been around for a year and a half.
Yeah. It is what it is. I mean, a lot of people just have their head down in the sand. And for a long time I was too. You know, I didn't listen to a lot of resources and stuff like that, and most of the time I just get used to the noise coming out of you. You're just a wall of noise, Mike, and so I ignore most of it. So this is kind of a good
that's
way for me
peril.
To catch. Yeah, right? Occasionally there's a good nugget that spews out. But no, that's where I get most of my industry news, actually, is reading the notes that you put up. So it's a good source. It's a great source, honestly. Let's see. Unimus. We got Thomas on here. We could talk a little about Unimus. He added Cumulus support, among other things, I'm sure. I think there were some database updates as well. Or maybe you added support for more databases? I can't remember. You tell us, Thomas.
We added support for PostgreSQL, but that was I think about a month ago, actually, by this point.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we added Cumulus, and actually we also added support for SSH keys. Quite a few people were requesting that, and it's an obvious feature which needs to be present, so yeah.
Gotcha. How long did the Postgre... how do you say that? Do you say PostGRE or PostgreSQL? Or how do you pronounce
it? PostgreSQL.
PostgreSQL. How long did
that's,
it take
that's
you
That's
to...
how I say it. That might not be the correct way. That's just how I say it.
That's how I've always sort of said it. How long did it take you to implement that? Like 5-10 minutes?
That was actually not me directly implementing it. I am not an SQL expert by far, so that was one of our other programmers doing it. And his joke was that Postgre is like the special child between the SQL databases because it was giving him just problems on every single step. Like the things that that are very easy to do in other databases, of course it would not work in Postgres. So I think altogether to add Postgres support was about a week of work.
Christ. All right, well, good.
But like this is actually only because we actually use an entity framework. If we weren't using an entity framework, then it would be like project for a month. But it's basically an abstraction framework that abstracts you from writing database queries and directing and interacting with the database directly. You use the entity framework for that. And it just makes your life easier.
Nice, nice. Very cool. Anything else you'd like to talk about Unimus? Any new updates coming in the pipe that we should be excited about?
We actually have 0.3.3 coming out this week, which brings the SSH key support and Cumulus and all that. And actually, we are pretty sure, we have a plan for actual release for 1.0.0 that's now on the forums that deals with our beta users and how beta accounts will be migrated to production accounts and all of that. So if any of the guys listening are still running a beta Unimus account, just visit our forums. There is all the information regarding beta and release on there. And yes, we are currently planning, and it seems like it's actually fairly realistic that we will have a full 1.0.0 production ready approved release in May.
Rock and roll, man. That's awesome, dude.
I have no idea what I'm running. On either of my accounts, I guess I got two. One for my WISP, one for the IX. I have no idea. I'll look into it sometime.
All right. So moving right along, kind of on that Cumulus rant, Mike put up something about free range routing. It's an open source project. I believe it's a recent fork of Quagga. And I know most people in the industry try and attempt not to do a fork, right? So it's sort of... I guess that it's frowned upon, right, to fork a project, but Quagga, I think, has been in decline for a while, and it's just...
Sometimes a product is just forked.
Yeah, well, I mean, from my understanding is there haven't been any updates. It's basically just kind of become stagnant, and Cumulus and a lot of other people out in the world and the big bad internet wanted to use it, and so they forked it so they could gain a little bit more control. I think it's part of the Linux Foundation now, right, where... That's sort of twofold. Yeah. Either you go to the Linux Foundation to get some structure, so that the community can kind of grow in a controlled manner, right? There's some checks and balances in there, or it's somebody who's decided to abandon a project and they just leave it in the Linux Foundation and say, good luck to you. I think it's the former rather than the latter in this case. Cumulus, I think, apparently is on the first release or the very near release of free range routing. They're going to implement that into their code base. So they're going to start using it. I think they had some other people's contributions in there. Let's see. Big Switch, Orange, LabIn, NetDev, Volta, Sixwind. I mean, so there's some other people backing it. So I like the idea of this because Quagga, I know, was very Cisco-centric, right? It configured and... If you could say it's industry standard CLI. So if you're familiar with Cisco, you could pick up and start using Quagga. So hopefully they kind of continue that as well in this FRR moving forward. I'm interested to kind of see where it goes. I mean, it's going to do most of your big stuff, your VGP, your ISIS, LDP, OSPF, PIM, RIP. So you're going to be able to do MPLS with this and all the other good stuff. Maybe MikroTik version 7 routing engine will be based off of FRR. Who knows?
if it ever happens.
No, when it happens, so right?
To me, it's actually interesting because currently Cumulus doesn't have MPLS or VPLS support. So maybe they're hoping to actually use this even for full feature MPLS, VPLS implementation inside of Cumulus.
That's what it looks like. It looks like this is their holy grail. So it'll be interesting.
It's a very interesting choice to keep it open source then, though. From a business perspective, Cumulus being, I know they're built on Linux and they work with open source tools, but it's still a interesting and very commendable, very good choice.
that well, like with Ubiquiti, was it like last year, moving their routing platform over to a Zeb OS based platform that comes with IP Infusion that, you know, adds a whole bunch of MPLS and, you know, Metro Ethernet functionality. Seems like there's quite a few, you know, good projects out there to choose from, and this one might be another one of those once they get you know, some of the Quagga issues worked out.
Yeah, I heard. I think it was probably Greg from the Packet Pushers. I think he said something like people complaining about open source projects. You know, they say it doesn't have the features I want, so I'm not going to put any money into it. Well, if you put money into it, they'll put the features in you want. So it's sort of like a chicken or egg scenario, right? So pick a project that's got most of what you like, that looks like it's got a lot of momentum, and, you know, invest some time and some code and some money into it, and it will become the thing you need. Let's see. Moving right along, there's some Surge Suppression 101 out there, which I think is slightly interesting. I only glazed over it. I need to go back and look at it a little bit, but it gives you kind of the ins and outs of how the surge suppression stuff works. A little bit of industry news. Extreme picks up Brocade's routing access or assets. I know this is old news, but we're kind of just now getting around. Who was it that bought Brocade again? Was that Broadcom?
Qualcomm, some of the. It was one of those.
I think it was Broadcom picked up Brocade, but I think from my understanding, they really wanted them for the Fibre Channel assets or something like that. So they immediately decided to sell off kind of the routing assets and the wireless. Who's it? Ruckus? Is that who they owned?
Like they had just bought Ruckus for some, you know, huge amount, and then within 6 months, they turned around and sell the whole company to Broadcom.
Yeah. And so now they're unloading those assets, and they've have landed in Extreme's pond, which...
There's someone's gone to Aeris, someone's gone to Extreme now. There's still other parts that are up for sale that haven't gone yet. You know, ultimately, yeah, I think it was just, you know, an intellectual property play. They just bought them to get their patents and knowledge and, you know, to not compete with their existing clients. They're going to shed all the, you know, actual manufacturing.
Yeah, it's a smart move. And the Fibre Channel stuff, there's a lot of life stuff. There's a lot of life left still in that, you know. So even if it seems like a dying industry, they can just ride it into the ground and make a ton of money off of it until it's gone, and then ride off the bones or ashes or whatever and just keep trucking. Let's see what else we got. Unify, ACN wall. So who is that? Ubiquiti announced a new kind of small, they call it in wall. I don't know. It's about the size of an electrical plate and just mounts right in the wall. It looks like it's AC. So it's got dual bands. It's going to do 5 gig, 2.4. It's PoE powered. It's got a PoE out port on it, as well as just a standard data out port. Pretty cute. Goes right into the Unify system. So you can manage all these little dudes from a central, you know, the central management portal. What else is interesting about these? Very small size, right? So it'd be good for, like, MDUs, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was an upgrade to their existing in-wall N that was only single band and extremely low power. You know, this still doesn't have much power, but believe they've talked more about that in our Wispapalooza 2016 Ubiquiti products video.
There you go. So now they got a little bit more out on it.
Yeah, it probably means it's actually going to be shipping soon versus just sitting on the table.
Very cool. It's really cute. Looks good. Everybody loves the Unify stuff, so it's pretty neat. Let's see. I guess one of the big ones in the biggest set of announcement stuff is the MUM that happened. It was the European MUM 2017. Where was that actually at? Was that Italy?
It was in Milan.
There you go. I think, I don't know, you were there. Yeah, you were there, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a booth. Unimus had a booth there. I figured we would just kind of rattle down the product list really quick and say a few things about this and that. They announced the CSS Cloud Smart Switch. Is that what that stands for? Yeah, Cloud Smart Switch. It's the 326-24G-2S plus RM. I hate saying all these model numbers. Anyway, it's a 24-port gig switch with two SFP pluses, and it's PoE, right? So it's, is it AFAT? Does it both? I'm not sure.
AFAT and passive. It's software selectable.
Sweet action. And it runs multi-port SWOS switch. Switch OS. Hopefully it's... And you're speculating, Thomas, that it's like... It's not the old switch OS that everybody hates. It's like probably something new and different.
So my speculation was originally I was really hoping that under the hood, the new SWOS, and MikroTik actually calls it SWOS now, so even though it's switch OS or SVOS, they call it SWOS. So the new switch OS I was originally hoping would be just routerless on the backend, underneath a new GUI that would be really easy to use and user-friendly. But it turns out that's completely not true. So it's still actually SwitchOS. It's full, the SwitchOS that we know from the days of old. It's just been, recompiled and upgraded for new hardware. And so I talked to MikroTik about this, and new switches from MikroTik, they are, they are dual boot, so you can run routerless and SwitchOS on them. But most of new features for switches will be coming to SwitchOS first, and they didn't specify if the new features, new switching things would be SwitchOS only, but they definitely said that it will be SwitchOS first, which actually to me is kind of a bummer, and I'm just not happy about that choice that MikroTik made at all, but that's just my personal opinion. It's the old SwitchOS. New switching features and new switching products and new switching functionality will be coming to SwitchOS first, but most of them will be dual boot, so you can just go back into RouterOS, but then RouterOS might not have all of the switching features that that will be available in SwitchOS. And of course, SwitchOS doesn't have like the 99% of functionality and features that RouterOS has.
For pure switches, I really hope that they put the time and effort into the SWAS. Well, I'll go ahead and start forcing myself to say it, SWAS, to get all of the basic functionality there and make sure that it's bulletproof, because I think they're going to move a whole hell of a lot of these, and if they don't get it right, it's going to look really bad PR-wise, because they're putting a $139 price tag on these things, MSRP, right? So I'm going to be expecting these for $125. So 24-port gig that does passive, AF, AT, and has two SFP plus uplinks. I don't know of any other switch that's coming in at that price point. Do you? Or even close to it? All right. So,
I don't think the PoE one is that cheap. I think the PoE one is a bit more expensive, just the non-PoE one is that cheap.
Is it? So they're doing a non-PoE version as well? And that's the one that's $139?
Yeah, the 139 one is without PoE. Yeah,
that's still really cheap.
It's good price. It's there are not as cheap but comparable products out there, but not as cheap.
Yeah.
My personal beef with this, and of course I talked to the MikroTik guys at the MUM about this, is that SwitchOS currently is missing just so many things that it's missing that RouterOS already has. So my personal fear, and then of course MikroTik listened to this, and I made my case to them that you can run into a vicious loop where you want the product, the hardware with the new switching features that are available on in SwitchOS, but then you want things which are available only in RouterOS, like even SNMPv3, like SwitchOS still has SNMPv1, right? And then of course Radius and LLDP, and actually being able to manage it through something else than just web, because SwitchOS only has that web interface and all of those things. So you can run into a situation when, you know, some things are only in SwitchOS that you need and some things are only in RouterOS which you need. But of course, only time will tell how MikroTik, you know, what will actually happen with SwitchOS in the future.
Yeah, it's that three legs of the triangle thing, right? It's like fast, cheap, and reliable or something like that, right? It's just all kind of, you can pick two things, but you can't have all three. And so is it going to be feature rich, or is it going to be cheap, or is it going to be, you know, have all the port densities that we need? You know, at some point there'll be some parity, I guess, but just not yet. Let's see. There's a lot more stuff they have. They are starting to do some 6 gigahertz stuff now. DynaDish 6 and SXT 6, which I think a lot of people were surprised about.
6D.
6 also.
Yeah, 6 gigahertz gear.
Oh, I guess I didn't care about those, so I forgot about them.
Yeah. They don't... Do we even do 6 gigahertz in the States? Is that a thing here?
6 gig is licensed, and there's very strict requirements. You need a fairly good performing 3-foot dish is the minimum dish that will be allowed in 6 gigahertz. So it is impossible to use an SXT or that dish.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess that's for other markets then. Let's see what else. They have the Cloud Router Switch, the CRS 317 dash. What is that? Is that an IG or a 1G? Anyway, dash 16S Plus. It's something. There's a thing in there. That's basically a CRS that's 16-port SFP switch. Next generation switch chips. They're claiming full wired speed on 10 gig. I said that's if you're just switching. Hardware base, spanning tree, dual boot, switch OS or router OS. So this is again what Thomas was talking about, where you can, on some devices, you can choose to boot into switch OS or router OS, but there's no feature parity between the two. So you have to kind of pick which one supports the features you want and or need. The WAP LTE kit. So it's a WAP with an LTE card, does 2G, 3G, optional external antennas. Comes with stand mount. That's kind of cute.
Wah, wah. Does not run any LTE bands I care about.
All right, fantastic. They have the HAP Mini as well, which is another one of those design departures, right? So it looks really good. Aesthetically, it looks really good. It's tiny. It's only got a 2 gigahertz radio in there. Only 3 Ethernet ports as well.
So tiny.
Is it? They said, 8 centimeters tall?
It's so tiny.
I'm not sure what that is in American, but it's pretty little.
I think that's 3.5 inches, something like that.
All right, super tiny. Inches? So it's a weird sort of... Is this sort of between the MAP and the HAP Lite, I guess? It's sort of in between those two?
I do like the slide where they show the HAP Mini being 6 times the size of the HAP Lite, or the HAP.
Yeah, I think they messed up on that a little bit.
Despite it being small.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks cute, though. It looks really cute. It'd be good to, you know, keep a couple of these in your bag, I guess, just in case. Let's see, moving on. The RB1100 AHX4. I think a lot of people seem to be fairly surprised that they're continuing on with this line, that they're just growing it. So it looks just the same, but it's got a quad, what is this, an Annapurna Alpine CPU, 1.4 gig, two internal SATA 3 ports, two M.2 ports. They have a version that's called, the Dude version, I think, that's got a 60 gig SSD built in.
Yeah.
Hardware accelerated IPsec, NEG 48 volt DC telecom power built straight into it. It doesn't even eat up one of the PSU slots, and now it's got dual power supplies as well. You guys
with one of those like cable holders too, so it can't just fall off.
Oh yeah, that kind of goes over the back of it. Are you guys excited about this? Do you run a lot of 1100s?
I don't know if to be excited or not, because. If it didn't have the 1100 name, I'd be like, this sounds like a great product. But it has that name, so I'm like, so, like, why did they do that?
I run a couple of them, and I haven't really had any problems with them, but they're notorious for one or two of the ports, right? It's like 11, 12, or 13 is somewhat problematic on the old version.
Yeah, it's, like, I've got a lot of 1100s and some 1200s out there, like, probably more than any other, you know, any other router I have. But it's like, they stopped making those, or, well, they stopped being worthwhile years ago, and it's like they're just, resurrecting an old brand. And if you didn't know any better, you'd think it was the same thing, because the front looks exactly the same.
Yeah, it does. So I guess, aesthetics-wise, if you've sort of standardized on the 1100, I mean, that footprint, you know, that you're going to be able to keep moving forward with everything in the same way you did before. I mean, it looks fairly similar. Just beefed up.
Yeah, it looks the same, but better.
So, for me, we actually have a ton of 1100s, which really a lot, and they've been rock steady, they've been stable, working great for years now. And I wonder if, you know, the choice to resurrect the old name aside, I wonder if we will be starting to see more high-end products replacing the CCRs, replacing the tile architecture. Gotcha. And this is just pure speculation, of course. But since we know that tile itself, you know, has basically over the years stopped being supported and been, replaced by more popular and other technologies in the enterprise, you know, tile and Tilera by themselves, since they were bought and all the market acquisitions and everything. And I could be mistaken, but I think tile is even completely unsupported already.
Oh wow!
And you know, this might not be true, but I seem to remember reading somewhere that tile is not even supported anymore. So I wonder, and as I said, pure speculation, if we are slowly, we'll be seeing more and more these higher-end Microtik products which are built on ARM and slowly start replacing tile. And I think perhaps the 1100 AHX4 is first of those new products.
And that makes sense. You know, build upon a name everybody knows and trusts, and a lot
and
of the
separated from the CCRs.
Yeah, yeah, true story. But, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
It and yeah, there's no official pricing out, but you know how Rocknock will typically speculate at the pricing, and just. Because like when the 1072 came out, he had a price on it like right away, and asked him about it. He's like, "Yeah, I think it's gonna be around here. I don't really know. I've just been guessing at Microtik pricing, and I've been pretty close." But they have the Dune edition, which has the hard drive and smaller stuff, at $349, which is, you know, $75 less than the CCR 107.
I don't think 7 is sold anymore. 10.9. 10.09 is the lowest model.
Well, yeah, 9-7G. It's the new version of the 9 that has the combo port.
Yeah, I guess the only downside is you have no optical interfaces on this thing.
No opticals.
Which is kind of a pain in the butt for me.
I think what will be the deciding factor if this thing's worth a darn or not is what the block diagram ends up looking like. Mm-hmm. You know, how are the ports connected at how big of speeds?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at that, unless they're just recycling imaging, the mock-up image they have shows group 1 and group 2, so I'm assuming they have the chips broken up, you know, the first 5 and the second 5 into two separate switch chip groups.
Sure, yeah, but like on the 3011 it has two groups, but they have 2 gigs going to the back plane instead of 1.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Just see how it all...
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, I'm going to guess if the one with the hard drive is 349, the one without, what, 300? Just guess.
Sounds fair.
That's not a terrible price.
I mean, to me personally, the Dude Edition is just... sorry, Microtik, but that's just a laughable product. And this goes into my opinion on the Dude and on how your monitoring system should even look like, because let's not even start this debate, but I think running your monitoring system on a router is just not a good choice. Therefore, introducing a new product which is specifically aimed, you know, it's a router, but it's also now an appliance that's supposed to run your monitoring system. Gotcha. And that to me is a strange choice. Maybe it will work out for Microtik, maybe not, but for me this is a very, very strange product.
So when they launch the 1100 AH NetXMS edition, you're gonna jump on that bandwagon?
I wouldn't even then, because just like even backups, how do you backup this thing? Currently, you know, you don't have the power of Linux that you have with a normal system where you deploy it and you can do anything from backups through replication, through high availability, through all of those. You know, a router is a router. It's not meant to run applications.
I know. I just like winding you up a bit. What were you going to say, Mike?
The current list price for the AEHX2 is $349.
Huh.
So if Rocknox price is accurate, you'll be getting a much bigger, better box, assumingly,
mm-hmm.
for the same price or less.
Gotcha. So it's pretty much just a one-for-one replacement.
And then you got the 3011s at $180. So figure that not new edition, if it's $300, it's kind of a nice gap between a 3011 and a CCR.
All right. So something else that Microtik announced is the PowerBox Pro. And this looks very akin to something Ubiquiti just put out. I can't remember what it's called. But it looks like a box you put up on a tower. It looks like it's got basically a hex inside, 5 ports of PoE out, AFAT, and it's got an SFP port. So you can basically run fiber up to this thing, power it, and then he can PoE to your radios. Power output for your CPEs. I'm assuming you could use this up on a tower, right? Or maybe this thing just doesn't have enough theoretical throughput to be useful on a tower. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Again, confusing. So you have the SFP for fiber to the tower. So that's bringing in your fiber backhaul. That's not, at least in the U.S., that's not a very common thing to have, where you would drop it into essentially a hex PoE. I mean, if you've got fiber to the tower, you're dropping it into a CCR or, you know, something sturdy. It seems like a little bit lightweight on the, you know, on the power side to have fiber coming into it.
You could look at this like just a switch, right? So you could probably crank on all the switch chips, and then you've got, I mean, theoretically gig, right? So you could have all of your APs gigged in, and then it's just gigged down to the base, and then it's a PoE switch in that instance, I guess.
Also, this thing will have no problem doing a gig in MPLS.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it could, you could stick it up on a tower and have it power some sectors, yeah, or, you know, some directionals or whatever.
Fancy media converter?
Yeah, yeah. So you get a tower. All right, now something that I saw for the first time here, and I'm sure you guys have discussed it, but it's the MUPS, the MUPS. It looks like a smart PoE injector is what they're calling it. So it looks like a PoE injector that has a battery backup built into it. Is that pretty much it?
More confusing.
Please, Microtik, if you're listening to this, send me a few units for testing. I really want to get my hands on this.
It says can charge and monitor.
Yeah, I can imagine so many applications for this, but I don't yet know what it can do and what it cannot do.
Is there an IP address on this thing?
It's actually a normal router board.
What?
But with an addition of, as far as I understand it, it's a normal router board, with an addition of charging and discharging and power distribution unit that you can actually connect the battery to, and it will, you know, either power something off it or charge the battery when there is utility power and all of those things. All
right, so that was in no way conveyed in the slide. So
that's how I understood the product. It might be something else. That's why I'm saying I really want to get my hands on this and see what it can do. It is.
Can charge and monitor. And I was like, I was trying to figure out, does that mean it's like remotely monitorable, or is it just sort of the electronics are monitoring the battery float, or I mean, what is it doing? So that's interesting.
I think it will just be a normal router as SNMP under health. So, you know, just read it from SNMP.
Well, that's actually far more interesting than I thought it was. There you go.
I can see it at like an extremely micro pop or like CPE, you know, in a WISP world, you know, other applications, you haven't got cameras or, you know, things like that. Too small for like a full tower usage.
Yeah. Well, it seems like if you were going to use these on the CPE side at somebody's house, it would have wireless AP built in as well, right? So it could be kind of wireless.
For us, it's, for example, for IP camera systems, it's wonderful. If you just need to have two cameras in a remote location, or, you know, it depending on how you design your city-wide camera system and all of that, for that, it's wonderful. For microcells, it might also be real interesting, because for a microcell, you can easily, you know, put in a battery which can hold the microcell alive for 6 hours or so without a problem, and this could actually charge it and distribute it and monitoring and all of that. I mean, I can really think of 50 different use cases for us where it would be really useful, where currently we use different electronics and a bunch of different things to do it. And if this could all, again, I don't know what it can do, but if it is what I imagine it is, then it could for us replace a lot of electronics and a lot of custom boards we have for battery charging and monitoring and all of that. So,
with all that said, why didn't they build this kind of functionality into like the power box up there where you have 5 PoE outs?
Who knows?
Because that would be really cool. Because then you could do a micro pop where you have a backhaul radio and then you've got like an OmniTic, right? So you need to PoE power two devices and have backup power. So I guess in theory you could just add two of these things, but it would be nicer if you had, you know, one ring to rule them all, sort of thing.
I mean, you could still power a power box from this. Yeah, I know, but you know, maybe it will be the next product in this line if this picks up. Who knows?
Yeah, or the OmniTics, don't they have a PoE pass-through?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, so there's OmniTics which have 4 PoEs out as well. Yeah.
All right, so you could power the OmniTic and then also the backhaul radio for the micropop. And this thing could be the power source / backup. All right, there you go. See? That would.
Assuming you could get enough power via PoE to power all these devices.
Yeah.
Over a single wire.
Right, I guess, and your runs need to be short enough. I don't know. It's an interesting idea. We'll just have to wait and see when it hits the market. Let's see. There's also, and again, this is one I am not sure on this. This is really perplexing to me. The LTAP Mini. It's got a 2 gigahertz access point, built-in a rugged case, mini PCIe for LTE, built-in GPS, serial port for other devices, perfect for cars or outdoor mobile applications. Could that be any more confusing? What is the use case?
It's MikroTik getting into automotive.
Yeah.
Smart cars, connected cars, GPS system for car tracking, and even connectivity to the car, computers that actually give you statistics and, you know, like gas mileage and all of that from the car. It's MikroTik trying to get into automotive, interesting.
Does that mean, but if you're going to get to that GPS stuff, you have to do that in a convenient way for your software or whatever, right? So does that mean they're opening some of that stuff up? I guess the API.
No, you can just read it over SNMP or API or whatever, yeah. SSH.
That makes sense. And I guess the serial port, they already give you the ability to control a serial port remotely.
Yes. So you can have actually a serial pass-through.
Yeah.
So you just SSH or Telnet, and it actually drops you straight onto the serial line.
Okay, picks it up and goes. That's interesting. So you could also use this for out-of-band management, right? At some site?
For all kinds of different things, yeah. But I think mainly it's in automotive.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. They said perfect for cars and stuff like that. That's what I figured.
What this really needs, though, to pick up the... I should probably get back on the camera. To pick up the horse to get beaten again is version 7 because of the... there's a bunch of LTE stuff that they're not going to be doing until version 7.
Interesting.
So they keep making LTE hardware that is really needs version 7 to shine. So... come on, let's go.
I wonder if God, what's that guy's name? His name's falling right out of my head. He's the guy that runs the big sugarcane farm in Florida.
What's Pat Harris.
Pat Harris. Golly, that fell right out of my head. This is kind of what he was doing with his tractors. His big network supports all those tractors. I bet this sort of thing would at least be interesting to him, not even if it's not something he could use. And kind of tied in with that is the. I guess right along with that is the LTAP. It's got too many PCI slots, so I guess you could do two LTE cards in there. It's got a 2.4 AP built in, 880 megahertz CPU, two MMCX connectors, built-in GPS, and it looks very industrial. And so I'm assuming it's just the bigger version of that little mini device.
Yeah, and then, you know, that you could, you know, have an LTE card for, you know, two different carriers. So, you know, you can always maintain, you know, data connectivity back home. I wonder what the MMCX goes to. Does it go to, is it, you know, going through to the, you know, to the mini PCIs? Is it for the AP? Is it for the GPS? All of the above? Hmm. Where does that go?
I guess we have to wait for the block diagram.
It's interesting nonetheless. Or I guess maybe they've done an FCC filing. Would it have the block diagram on any of that stuff?
I haven't seen one yet.
All right. I mean, it's got a radio in it, so don't you have to file that stuff with the FCC before you can? All right. So maybe.
I get emails whenever certain vendors have a new FCC ID, so.
There you go. Let's see, moving right on the list, WSAPAC Lite. So this looks like a very familiar announcement that Ubiquiti just made. It looks just like the Ubiquiti N wall, so mount into standard EU or US electrical sockets. So it's that form factor, right? Fits in kind of a electrical plate. Dual band AC, phone jack pass-through, two LAN ports, USB for charging phones, which I thought was cute. They added a little charging port onto it. And it looks like the Ethernet ports have kind of a screw-on cover as well, if you want. So that's pretty neat.
This is clearly targeted to the hospitality, you know, or maybe, you know, MDU industries. I would hope that they would have protection on those USBs.
I hope if somebody plugs in their phone, you can just backdoor in through the router OS and jump into their phone, get into their file system, pull all their movies and their pictures off their phone.
No, it says a charging port, so hopefully the data is completely disconnected.
Or maybe you just use everybody's LTE off their phones, and you just create, you know, just a big shotgun network based off of everybody's phone tethering. I don't know,
but
the case design, I think, actually looks really nice. It looks really clean. The side, the vent holes, they use kind of a honeycomb pattern. It, you know, it's kind of curvy. It looks nice.
It looks like something that you would see in a hotel or, you know, other commercial building for sensors of one kind or another, you know, for the HVAC system or, fire systems or, you know, it looks like it belongs there.
Yeah, it looks very much like a thermostat or something like that. It's very smooth and sleek and inconspicuous for sure. It's not all square and angles like they normally are. So that's nice. Let's see. They have the WAP 60G. So they're getting into the 60 gig game. That millimeter wave action. Looks like full gig duplex. 1 gig duplex, right? So you can do it both directions. Wireless wire kit pre-configured. That's cute. Wireless wire kit. I'm assuming that means it's pre-configured so you can just slap it up and it'll be bridged together. Which is, it's going to be good for a lot of installers and integrators, I know. They'll be able to just take them without having to have any knowledge of the system.
Yeah, the interesting,
go ahead.
The interesting thing on that is that Ubiquiti had a product a few years ago that, you know, came pre-configured, two units talk to each other only, and they no longer have that product. Apparently nobody wanted it. So hopefully people want this one.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm really interested to see what the price point's going to look like.
I believe I saw in the video, because I watched the live stream, and then, well, I didn't watch it live. I had to watch it later. I believe the price point they responded with was between $100 and $1,000.
A very Microsoft cousin.
That was the response when I asked at the desk, you know, what's it going to cost? Between 100 and 1,000.
That's okay. That's where I would expect it to be.
Is that 100 for a pair?
Can we narrow that? True.
Yeah.
Are they sold in pairs?
Yeah, so the WAP 60G, the small guys, because it's a WAP, right? Think of the WAP, that small form factor. It's designed for 100 meters, so basically the distance of an Ethernet cable. So if you're trying to go across a road, or, that's like, what, 325 feet, something like that. So, it's a decent little distance. So you could hit an outbuilding, hit something across a lot of concrete. So I'm assuming it's going to be fairly inexpensive. The good thing about 60 gig, right, is that frequency doesn't penetrate very well, so hopefully you're not going to have a lot of interference issues or anything like that with this stuff. Let's see, and then you have the LHG 60 gig, which is a much larger kind of dome-based setup. Works 60 gig, familiar LHG design, yeah, it looks just like the other ones. Quad-core ARM CPU, low cost and low weight. Longer distance than 100 meter. So one is 100 meter. This one is longer distance. So they don't really give you an ideal target for that. I'm assuming it's going to be just like everybody else's stuff, right, Mike?
Yeah, I've got some 60 gig gear up. I'd like to get some more up. You know, there's five or six vendors out there now doing 60 gig multi-point, which I wonder if that's a possibility of if you could reconfigure the WAP. So that's such a low gain antenna, given its size. Well, comparatively, if you could configure that as an access point and the LHG as a client and do 60 gig multi points. But yeah, I wonder what the gain is on that antenna. That will determine. Well, that and the price will determine how useful it is.
Well, they're saying quarter 2, quarter 3 on these things, so we should hear something a little bit more firm soon.
Yeah. Well, we're in quarter 2 already, so.
Yeah. So we're...
Soon.
Yeah. Yeah, soon-ish. It's interesting. I'm really optimistic about these things. So I know, what's the next cheapest? Probably the IgniteNet stuff, the MetroLink for 60 gig?
Yeah, IgniteNet, they've got a 42 dB version is like 550, like a 30... 5 dB version is, I think, like 500. But they are coming out with like a $300 product at some point.
Wow.
They don't, like, it's because that was their target when they started on the whole 60 gig thing in the first place, was to do 60 gig multipoint and then that big, to have a CPE that was actually priced where you could do it for a residential install. So we'll see where this falls with that.
That's cool. You have any interest in the 60 gig stuff, Thomas?
Uh, Depends on the price. If the price is right, then yeah, I can see a bunch of deploys that we could use this for. But you know, it would be really interesting for camera systems, for IPTV, where you actually put IPTV on like utility poles, and then you wouldn't have to pull fiber to the poles anymore. You could actually do it with this, but it just all depends on price. Because yep, I can imagine it actually going from pole to pole with this would be cheaper than, of course, pulling fiber. So it just depends.
Yeah, and then one other thing that I've noted is that 1 gigabit full duplex, I don't believe any of the multi-point platforms will do 1 gig. Well, none of the low-cost platforms will do 1 gig full duplex. They're getting closer, but none of them will do that yet. So maybe MikroTik will be the first that actually gets a full 1 gig duplex at a low price point.
Nice. It's fun to speculate. All right, there's still more products. The CRS112 8P4S. It's a small 4 or 8 port PoE gig, and that's AFAT. It says separate PSU for passive, or 802.3 AFAT PoE out. That's interesting. So it's got two little jacks on the back, one for passive and one for AFAT stuff. Per port, detection of AP standard.
Yeah, well, and then it just appears to be two different voltage ranges.
Yeah.
You know, high voltage, low voltage. I did notice they have a lot of AFAT products. That's one thing that I remember hearing a lot of people wanting is AFAT. And they seem to have a lot of those now.
Yeah, man. They're getting with it. It's also got 4 SFP ports. So that's cool.
Good. 4 SFPs. Good.
And then they've got a Papa Bear version of that. Cloud Router Switch. I don't even feel like reading the model number, but it's a 24-port version of the exact same thing.
Except now it has SFP Plus ports, too.
Oh, those are SFP Plus. All right.
So you could, daisy chain and not lose capacity. Relatively.
Very, very nice. Let's see. And then they've got another version. God, they got so many.
Yeah.
No, that's the same version. They're basically saying it's the dual boot, Switch OS, Router OS.
But only a single power supply.
That's nice. 4 SFP Plus, one regular 120, 220 volt connector. So nothing weird.
Like that would be nice if it was a dual power input.
Oh, what the hell is this thing? They have something called the Woom. Woobum?
I thought it was a joke at first.
Or wireless out of band management. It looks like a USB dongle. Plug into a device to have a new management AP. Can work as client to use in CCR rack mounts. So, what is this thing?
So, the use case is actually, it's a very tiny, USB drive that you can actually hang onto your keys or whatever. And you can plug it to any MikroTik USB, and then it will broadcast a wireless that you can connect to. And over that wireless, you will actually have the console.
Does it do anything other than console?
No, it's just out-of-band console that you can, plug this into a USB port, and then suddenly you have a console.
So it works on MikroTiks.
It works on MikroTiks, yes. And or you can buy many of them and then switch them into a client mode, so you can have, 10 CCRs and then buy 10 of those, plug it into each CCR, connect it, all of the 10 into an access point, and you have out-of-band management.
Does it work just on CCRs right now?
Supposedly any MikroTik with a USB port.
Really? I didn't know they had like USB serial capabilities built into them.
Well, you can actually, even right now, you can buy a USB to serial converter and plug it into a MikroTik USB and you will have a serial.
So then does it just expose, does it do the MikroTik, as you were saying earlier, the SSH or Telnet redirect to the serial port?
I don't know. They didn't have it showing on the product demo table, unless I missed it, but I'm pretty sure they didn't show it. I would imagine it will be a web interface that you connect to, and it will have a console,
man,
a CLI.
It's too bad they don't just have like a brick that's got a whole bunch of USB ports that you could just and then have that one brick you connect to. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, having one like on your keychain or something, I can see it being useful. But I mean, if I want to have a full rack of CCRs in an out of band management connectivity console, then I personally would just buy a console server and be done with it. But this is an option too, and it's supposed to be very, very cheap. So I wonder what that means.
That's cool. Maybe we can hack them and do some interesting things with them. Let's see. They've also got the M2, which is just a bare router board. 4-core, 880 megahertz CPU, 1 mini PCI, 1 gig Ethernet. So that's like a CPU.
M11.
Right? Oh, is that an 11? All right.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell if it was I's.
One wireless. One wireless, one Ethernet.
All right.
Yeah, it's the successors to the 711 and 911 series.
Yeah, and the other one's the M33. It's the
same 4-core. It's the successor to 433.
Yeah, it's got the 3 gig, 2 mini PCI, and one M.2 slot. USB 3 and serial support. Nice. And that was it. Holy crap. That was a lot of stuff, man. Let's see. What was the... Most of it said Q2 or 3 if it had a time frame on it at all. I think the vast majority of it didn't have any time frame for release on it, just kind of scrolling through. So who knows? It's interesting, though.
A lot of products. A lot of interesting stuff, a lot of new market segments, the automotive, the 60G, the 6G. It looks very interesting.
All right, man. We squeeze all that stuff pretty tight into an hour. I'd say we... stick a fork in it and then just pick up with a little bit of other stuff here next time. You guys cool with that? Great. Excellent. Silence is acceptance. All right. Mr. Thomas Kernak from Slovakia, if people want to get a hold of you on the internet, how do they do that?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. Just Google for me. Find me, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, whatever.
Yeah,
just Google for me and you'll find me.
I should say, go to Unimus, buy my product, and then look me up.
Yes, please do that.
Mike, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
I suppose probably our Facebook, and then I'll take it from there.
Yeah, so the keeper of Facebook is Mike Hammett. So all of this great material, most of these updates, pretty much 99.9% of all the updates that hit the Brothers Wisp is via Mike. Also, if you're a vendor and you're interested in having him evaluate any products, Microtik, send your stuff to Thomas. Everybody else, send your stuff to Mike. He loves to try out new things.
I will give a very...
impartial evaluation? Is that what you're looking for?
That, you will not be wondering what I think of the product.
Because he will blast it on the internet.
No, I always go private first. And if private fails, then I go public.
Right, right, right.
And if that fails, I keep going public.
Sure.
And then, I will take other vendor stuff too, I don't have a problem with that.
Thomas will take your stuff too. But no, seriously, any vendor opportunities, we don't get paid for this. We're looking to hit more shows. If you guys want to help us out, we'd be happy to take your monies. Let's see what else. I can be reached at gregsoul.com. It's my almost defunct blog. I still occasionally put stuff on there. If you have any questions or comments for us, again, Facebook, the Brothers Wisps group, just look us up. Anything you put on there is going to get responded to very quickly. Mike is on it like crazy. Any messages that come through, we're pretty good at responding. If you're old school and you really feel the need, you can hit us at contactus@thebrotherswisp.com if you want to do it email-wise. Other than that, any questions, comments, please let us know. You know, if you have something specific you want to hear about, there's probably 100 other people that want to hear about that same thing, and we're not going to know about it unless you tell us. So please reach out. If nothing else, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.
See you.